You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
Hey. It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, March 2nd, 2015. You're listening to episode 144, is it?
Wouldn't be a good intro if you didn't
if I didn't
it up,
screw something
part
up
way through.
Yeah, my name is Rob. That's Jason. Howdy, how are you?
Oh, I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm good.
You're distracted already. You're distracted by the gentlemen that are not sitting in the room with us, right. But kind of oddly are because they're on a little screen on your phone.
They're
once again propped up on a couple of boxes next to the microphone.
Camel up in Scoville. Can't go wrong, man. No, these are like the perfect boxes for popping up a mic.
Ghetto recording is our thing. We have a couple of wonderful guests. We have Matt Riddle and Ben Pinchback, designers extraordinary. Hi, guys.
How you doing tonight?
We're fantastic. How about you two?
Awesome. It's awesome. Yeah, awesome to be here. Looking forward to talking to you guys.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming out on pretty short notice. So this was...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Yeah. You guys are... You're kind of a big deal now.
It's true.
Let's be honest. I mean Fleet. I mean Eggs and Empires. I mean Floating Market on Kickstarter right now. You guys are killing it.
Thanks, Rob. He was paid to say that.
I know how to be nice to our guests.
Well, we didn't pay you per se. It was just, hey, we'll say nice stuff if you come on our show.
It's a deal.
I want to know what's going to happen with Floating Market when you guys sell out. Like, is the Kickstarter just going to stop then? Do you have a contingency plan?
I am legitimately shocked at how often that question comes up. I frankly know Ben and I talk with this a couple. We talk about it constantly, but when Rick kind of approaches and said, "Listen, here's what I want to do. You know, there's some sort of economics involved in my decision on the dice and things
Matt,
like that."
Rick being the owner, president of Eagle Griffin Games.
Thank you. But from the minute it launched, we were like, what happens if it gets 2001 copies? What happens if it gets 2013 copies? Aren't the add-ons going to screw everything up? Oh my gosh! Like, if people were legitimately, which I totally get, because it's a kind of a different way to do it. The answer is, they're going to have enough copies to cover the Kickstarter. So, it's not like you have to hit the button for 2,000. You can do 2013.
Well, you actually have it limited, though, at 2,000, don't you, currently?
Well, we have 2,000 backers. I mean, that's just, it's not like it's not like your copy's not going to say 1 of 2,000 or 2 of 2,000. Frankly, I don't think we're going to get there. I mean, I'm pretty good at math and I can kind of track the trends and stuff. We're going to come up a little short anyway.
Well, I don't know, man. Last week, this is going to be, you know, be broadcasting and everyone's just going to run in droves to check this out.
That is true. We got coverage on Shut Up and Sit Down today. So,
well, that's good.
Whoa, nice. That.
You should have, too. Like, you should get a huge bonus because you've got those meeples with hats now.
They're awesome, dude.
Which is amazing.
I'm so excited for those meeples.
Have you seen those on there, Rob? That's so cool.
They're so awesome.
They're meeples with, like the
like hats?
Yeah, the wide-brim, like, hats. Like the,
yeah. The big round.
What are they? Are they made out of, like some sort of plants? I don't know.
Yeah, they're straw. Or whatever.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But they look amazing.
The meeples themselves were already cool because they were like those little kind of like fat little kid meeples.
Yeah.
Kind of rounded and neat. And then now they have sweet hats. I agree. No, the point is to answer the question originally. I mean, Griffin has a little bit of leeway to. I mean, they're not going to print, you know, like 4,000 copies and sell them. That's not the deal. The deal is that to get this game, you're going to get it through Kickstarter. And they're going to print enough to cover the Kickstarter. Period.
Right.
So and then anything left over, because there's always people that there's always cancellations. Like I think there's like a 5% dropout rate usually per on any average project. People that just don't pay afterwards, their credit card doesn't work, whatever.
Right.
So there'll be a few copies in the wild available direct through Eagle Griffin if we do get real close to that 2,000 mark. So, no, we've talked about Eagle a little bit. I don't think I guess if we hit 2,000 with like a week to go, they would consider, you know, opening 500 more slots up, you know, things like that. But I don't really think that's a huge issue at this point.
I hope it happens because
so
it would be great. It's pretty cool, though. I mean, it's great to see. What are you, as of right now, you guys are like 32,000 or somewhere around there?
Yep, 32,000, 700 and something back, or 750 back, or something like that.
Nice.
We ended up with, I don't know, almost 1,000 backers on Eggs and Empires, and we're at a much steeper curve than Eggs and Empires was. So I do legitimately expect to hit 1,500.
Nice. You know,
1,500 backers.
Which is nice. I mean, it says something, because this game is quite a bit pricier than Eggs and Empires, because Eggs and Empires is a smaller, compact game.
It is, you know, and it's interesting, because I think people get a little bit, even I do, not jaded, it's not the right word, but it's so easy to kind of overreact a little bit to Conan and Ghostbusters and Tiny Epic Kingdoms and Tiny Epic Galaxies, who have like 10,000 backers. Well, that's like the 1%.
Right.
You know, most projects are getting 400, 500 backers. So it's, you know, 1,500 backers is nothing to scoff at. We're on track, honestly, to have our highest backer total. I mean, the original Fleet was around 1,200. Fab was right around 1,200. And then Eggs and Empires was right around 1,000. So at the current pace, we should surpass all of those, which is pretty amazing, like you said, for a more expensive game and kind of a bit of a riskier design, in the sense of it's not like a, you know, classic straightforward Euro. It's got some, you know, the polyhedral dice and the kind of the speculation gambling mechanic, and it's, you know, it's cool.
Yeah, it just goes to show that Matt has coined the phrase about Kickstarter that nobody knows nothing about nothing.
It's true, man. It's true.
I mean, we loved the game, but we honestly thought it might be a slower burn because people might not jump on to the theme or the dice and the, you know, gambling speculation. Like, we didn't really know what to expect, and it's gone, you know, way better than we could have imagined. So it just goes to show you just never know. So for, like, designers, we've always said, you know, you make the games you love and the type of game you want to play, and you go from there, right?
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it's true. You just don't know, you know, and like you said, having over a thought, I always tell anybody who I've ever talked to who's been new at Kickstarter and going to launch a project, I said, don't count on having more than 1,000 backers. Like, if your math to fund needs more than 1,000 backers, you might be in trouble, because that's a hard number to hit. And a lot of campaigns don't hit that number, but there's a lot that do, too. So.
Right. That's good advice. It's true.
I mean, and it's not, I mean, I told that to somebody else. I don't remember who it was. And then their Kickstarter did like 1,500 backers. And they're like, well, so I was wrong in your case. I'm like, but you never know that that's going to happen. I mean, you just never know.
No, I completely agree. It's 1,000 is kind of that magic number, because I think most of the people out there doing Kickstarters now, especially, you know, again, we work with Eagle Griffin, so we don't really get into the nuts and bolts of the production side. But I know, whether you're working with Panda or any of the publishing, you know, any of the publishing houses, you need 1,500 copies. Like, that's the minimum. They're not talking to you for less than that, for the most part.
Right.
So if you're not getting 1,000 backers, well, if you're, you know, Stouffer Games and you've got, you don't have a booth at Gen Con and you're just wanting to make your game, well, you got 500 copies floating around now that you're never going to sell, frankly. Like, you're going to sell a couple here and there, but for the most part, I mean, you hear stories all the time about, you know, like, you guys have talked about, I know you have, about how, you know, you kind of just have to deal with the fact that you're going to make your money off 1,000 copies, but the other 500 may never go anywhere. So
right. Well, and I've experienced that myself with Water Balloon Washout. I mean, because I printed too small of a batch to get a good price break, so I ended up not being able to do normal distribution if I wanted to not, like, lose money. So, yep. I mean, for that, I've just, and I've told other people this too, I pound the pavement, I go out there, I go to stores, and I distribute, you know, I do a distribution to them direct, and because I've done that, I've been able to sell 300+ copies. So but I mean,
nice.
Yeah, but I mean,
that's impressive.
Well, I mean, it helps that, like, local places, man, they want to support you, you know. I mean, they want, you know, yeah. Michigan's one of those places where you take something to a local place and say, listen, I'm local and I did this, people mm-hmm. want to support you, and then you just give them price breaks and make them want to buy more copies, and that helps.
Well, especially being Michigan guys, it's pretty cool that you printed it locally too.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool, unless you wanted to save money, and then it's not pretty cool. Unless you wanted a distribution.
I agree, though. Michigan is, it's a very, for whatever reason, it's a very, I don't think a lot of places are, but Michigan in particular seems very provincial. I mean, we definitely like to take care of our own and kind of support things from here. So that is legit. I mean, that's a legit marketing thing. Say, hey, we printed in Michigan, it's from Michigan, we designed all that.
Yep.
It's legit.
And I tell that to every store owner, and, like, I've not had a single store owner that didn't seem to care about that. Like, they're all like, oh, yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Guys, the four of us need to get together, we need to make a game about Michigan, and I bet we could sell it in every Michigan store in the state.
You're not wrong. Every store and every tourist trap. Actually, if it's going to be Michigan, it should probably be Beer Kings. But.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right on. Or Pop Kings.
Pop Kings. There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate that word. Pop. Anyway, so before we get into something more detailed, I wanted to ask you guys real quick, because this is the first time we've talked since we got back from UmPub. Can you guys talk about any of your highlights from UmPub?
Yeah. I'll do what I always do and promote your guys' friend TC Petty III for starters. He's had my favorite unpublished game for way too long now, Club Zen. I love it. I just think it's a great worker placement with a couple unique mechanics. He's got this teaming up thing that, you know, it's better to go to the buffet with a friend and things like that. And then he's got this morning, afternoon, night kind of, you have to spend your workers at the time of day that makes sense. And I think that's pretty genius. And me and Matt talk about it all the time. He's not so hot on the theme. He doesn't think it has mass appeal, the theme. I kind of think it – I didn't think Floating Market would have a mass appeal in the theme either. You just – you never know what people are going to glom onto. So that game's just brilliant. I love it. So I did play that. I've been saying – I played Matt Wolf's Balloon Delivery Service. You guys probably didn't get a chance to play that because
no, I didn't.
You were pretty busy.
I saw it, though. I wanted to try it. It looked cool.
Yeah. You just load up airships with goods and kind of – send them out over the water and see what happens, and hopefully they land where they're supposed to, or the wind might blow them off the board and you get the insurance money for the balloon, which is really funny. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, that one was really cool.
I think for me, I mean, one of Ben and I, this is one that Ben's mentioned in the past and I will again, it's our buddy Matt Loomis's game with some stupid name like Doimo or something dumb, but the game is great. Dumb as the name is. Hi, Matt. And the actual game is like this kind of carjacking thing. It's like a very social, which is funny because Matt's a very mathy guy. Like, super mathy, frankly.
Yeah.
As a designer.
Yeah, he is.
But, like, to a fault almost, I think, as far as, like, he's just, you know, he's overwhelming. He's so good at it. I mean, his math is insane. But the point is, his game's very social. There's this kind of give and take in how you pick cards to go on a scoring pile and pick cards that you're going to score. And the scoring pile, so to speak, is kind of public information. So it's just it's a very fun card game with a board in the middle, and that's probably the game I played last year that I loved as well. And then I played a game. It's funny because the one game I did play that I really really think about the most wasn't, I don't think he had a table, but Benjamin, who on Twitter is some fat kid.
Yeah, sure.
He had this little card game. It's like, and it was, I don't remember the theme. I'm not really sure. I actually thought the theme was all that great, frankly.
Well, clearly, if you don't remember it.
Yeah, I'm not a theme guy, so that's not really an insult to the game. But I don't think – I think it was like some army camp or something strange. But the theme didn't matter because the game was a little math puzzle. It was a very fun little drafting math puzzle where you – not drafting. You put cards out of a queue in the middle, but you had to pay for those cards using, you know, exactly two cards in your hand. So all the cards had – different numbers on them, like 1 to 5 or whatever. Actually, they were dots. So when you played the cards to the middle to collect the card, that card went in front of you, and the cards you paid stayed, and you're constantly fighting over the cards in the middle. And then the fun part was, after you bought the cards, you got to, like, had to, like, lay them out in a certain way to make pairs and runs, and like 2, 3, 4, and a pair of fours can be, you know, it's just a very clever. I love those card games. Like, you know, Ben played a game called Parade, and I love, like, Upluxin and Turn the Tide. It was kind of unthemed little mathy puzzle card games. I just love those. And this was just a really good example of one of those. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that kind of stuff too.
Game I think about the most of all the games I played.
That's cool. Yeah, Parade though. Parade's an amazing
game. I love
game.
Parade. Yeah.
Parade is one of the simplest. Parade. It's just the design is like, that's a design where, like, when somebody says to me, what's a game you wish you designed? That game. Because it's so stupid simple and so complex at the same time.
I spent days thinking about, like, trying to come up with one idea as brilliant as the idea that makes Parade work, and then when you play a game like Parade, it makes you angry you didn't think of it.
Yeah, because right. It's so simple. Like, how did not everybody think of that game?
Yeah, my biggest disappointment was not playing your guys' games after hearing about them for so long.
Right.
But every time I go by the table, there was, you know, just people waiting. You know.
Yeah, we did well with that.
Like 15 times each. So there's just, that was the cool part about UmPub was how busy it was, but, you know, I wish I would have got to play friends of mine's games more, you know, especially Ramblers and Saloon Tycoon and, you know, Monster Tea Party. But, you know, it's better for you to get the public feedback, so I wasn't going to butt in, but it was a bummer not to be able to play as much with your friends' games.
Well, that's,
I agree,
you know,
100%.
Something that I expected from UmPub that I didn't get, and this is not UmPub's fault, but when they talked about Designer Day, I thought Designer Day was like all the game designers can just play each other's games. And there was some of that, but then there was a lot of other stuff going on, so that ended up not happening as much as I thought it would. But
I think if I can be critical of them, Bob, I think scheduling a bunch of panels during Designer Day in the big room where everybody was trying to play games, I think that might have been – it could have been planned better, you know?
I kind of agree with you. I kind of think if they ask my opinion, which they won't, I could do without the panels.
Yeah, I mean, the panels were good. But I would have rather played games. In fact, I did play games through most of the panels.
So. Yeah, that's actually when I played Club Zen, as TC grabbed a few of us and we went in the other room and played Club Zen.
Well, that was I was super happy to be in the other room because of that, because we had tables over there already. So
yeah.
So yeah.
It's not that I don't appreciate the people's time, but
right.
I'm there to I'm more there to play games than.
And that first day, that's your chance to hang out with your friends and try their games. That
right.
If it's going to be as busy as you're never going to be able to try the next day, you know. But I bet they change it for next year because, you know, clearly we're not the only people that felt that way. I mean, there were lots of other people not in the rooms who were playing games in a little tiny room next door because there was no space. So they'll figure it out.
I'd be curious, though, what the overall feedback was. I mean, you know, we obviously most people are just going to tell you, oh, it was great, not really have a specific feedback. So that's kind of what people do. But I would be kind of curious if you had sort of the chance to poll everybody, even anonymously or even directly. Because I do think – the panels they had were fine panels.
Oh, yeah.
I just didn't want panels. Like, I don't go to panels at that kind of ordinance either. Right. I had no interest in them as a general rule of thumb. Right. So I was actually playing.
No interest in anyone else's opinions. Things. That sounds like the Matt Rodelino.
What is that?
I said, no interest in anyone else's opinions. That sounds like the Matt Rodelino.
Absolutely. That's
a fallacy. That might be true. Since he's smarter than everybody else, he doesn't need their panel.
But no, I'm with you, too. I'm like, I don't listen to very many podcasts, even though I make a podcast, because I don't know. I mean, I just don't always have time to, and there's other things I'd rather do, you know? So, I mean, it's okay.
It's
I mean,
I listen to everything. I'm a podcastaholic. So when it's like, hey, what do these guys think about Kickstarter? Like, my eyes rolled back in my head. I'm like, I know what they all think about Kickstarter. Like, let's, you know, let's play some games.
Yeah. Right.
I'm with you, Jason. To your original point, I just wanted to, because that Friday is like summer camp, right?
Exactly.
Right? Hey, you're giving hugs, you're patting backs. I mean, you haven't seen these guys in 6 months or a year or whatever. So you're just trying to make sure you say hi to everybody. And then you're not completely sure how much time you're going to have, so you're trying to get around to see everybody, and all of a sudden panels are going and it's over.
Right.
So I think Friday I would have liked more time to play games, but I can understand. I whatever. I think we've all made our points. I'm curious to see if Daryl's got feedback on that, positive or negative.
Right.
Yeah. So, moving on. We wanted you guys to come on here because we had a question from a builder who said, hey, you know, hey, you guys are always pitching games to each other. We want to know what it's like to pitch a game to a publisher. And Jason and I thought that was a great idea. And we said we should have a couple of publishers on the show. We can take turns pitching to them and just kind of experience that and share that with an audience. We've never actually done that before. But knowing that neither of us really has a whole lot of experience of that, we wanted to talk to you guys to try and give us some advice about pitching to a publisher and give us some advice and give all of our listeners out there some advice on that. So I wonder if you guys would mind giving us some thoughts there.
No, not at all. I mean, first of all, it's super hard. let me start there. You guys do a really good job in pitching each other, and I think it also actually does a good job of preparing guys like us for the experience. But, you know, I'm 38 years old. I have a fantastic life. You know, I'm very happy with everything that I've got going. I didn't think I'd ever feel like a high school kid again. So you sit down across from, you know, Jay from Rio Grande, and he's staring at you across the table, and you're like, uh-oh. And, like, suddenly I'm nervous. Suddenly it's like that, you know, first day of chemistry or that first day of, you know, class as a freshman. Like, I hadn't had that feeling, frankly, in a long time. And I wasn't prepared for it, honestly, because I didn't, you know, I'm, you know, confident to a fault sometimes, so I didn't expect to have those emotions again.
What Matt's trying to say is the first time we talked to Jay, he totally choked and I had to take over.
That is a true story. Ben, you know, I talk pretty well. I do it for, you know, somewhat for a living sometimes, but I could just tell about 3 minutes in, Jay was not feeling me. Like, he just wasn't interested in hearing anything that I said. So I basically just, Ben just took the hand off and went. Like, they just had a better connection from a, you know, a man to man, how what Jay wanted to hear that I was bringing to the table. So, but the point is though, it is very, you're going to be nervous. Don't underestimate that. I think from a more mechanical answer, it's obviously be prepared. I do think you'd be shocked, and this is from talking to even some of the guys that we know now that are publishers, how often they see a complete unprepared designer. They kind of just roll in there and have this game. They kind of just start kicking out of the box, and you know, they don't necessarily want to sit and play your game. They don't necessarily have time to do that. They want to hear why they should care about your game. And so the easy answer, I guess, is be prepared. And then from there, I think it's know your audience too. I mean, don't go and pitch, you know, publisher A. Don't go, you know, don't go pitch Meissen, or whoever that company is, Plaid Hat Games, you know, family game about balloons, right? Know who you're pitching and what you think their audience and what their market is.
So, well, let me jump in real quick, Matt, with a comment about your be prepared. I think one of the biggest things you can do is the publisher needs to know why does the publisher want your game? What makes it different? What's going to make it sell? Why your game and not somebody else's game? So the best thing you can do is, in under 30 seconds, be able to tell the publisher what makes your game special and different and why they should want it. And for instance, Jason, with your game Gunslinging Ramblers, listening to you talk about it recently, your pitch going, I mean, I know it's already signed, but your pitch going in would be simple. It's a beer and pretzels gambling gunslinger West game that I can teach you to play in 5 minutes and it's a riot, right? Like, that's the hook.
Right. Yep.
And if you don't have that hook, you don't have something to sell. You're just kind of boring them, or, you know, they're not going to latch on to it. If within the first 30 seconds, if you can't pinpoint exactly what's unique about the game, then you really don't have anything to sell them, because like Matt said, very rarely it's a privilege if they actually sit down and play your game for 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes, but that's not the norm in our limited experience.
And plus two, I think it's, you know, a lot of the audience, a lot of your guys' audience, and you know, they're listening now, probably are guys still trying to get their first game. Well, they don't need a good or even very good classic-y Euro from a guy they've never heard of. They can get a million of those from Anders Kramer and guys that have, you know, that are famous and
more famous.
Matthias Kramer, I meant. No, Andre Stedding. Andre Stedding, Matthias Kramer. That's what I was going after. Both of those guys. So they don't need another good to above average Euro. Even if your game is good, they don't need it. But they tell you this pretty straight out. They want to be blown away. So unfortunately or fortunately, depending on your game, the first time you're pitching, especially a bigger publisher, you get, like Ben said, you have to have some big hook that grabs their attention. It can't just be a gimmick. It has to be a game there too. But they are looking for that thing that's different. Because again, they can get good games from overseas and port them in here and take no risk. If they're taking a risk on a new guy, they want to have a hook that's sellable.
Well, another thing Matt was saying about knowing your audience, and this is true for any job interview you'd ever have as a professional, you do your research before you talk to somebody. So if you know you're going to talk to X publisher, you go online and you look at their catalog and you see what kind of games they do. And there's actually two ways to approach it. If they are specialized and dedicated to a certain line, then you're going to want to present something to them that fits into their line. So, for instance, if you're going to go talk to, like, Michael Coe at Gamelin, you're going to say, listen, I have a small game that fits in a small box, but it's a big Euro-feeling game in a small box that you're going to be able to make cheaply and yada, 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 because he's currently very dedicated to that concept, right? If you're dumb like me and Matt and try to pitch him a medium-weight Euro, he's just going to smile at you and say, I really like you guys, but I'm looking for small things. Don't know if you noticed or not. but you could actually go the other way too. If you notice a gap in a publisher, if they have a line of games, but there's a very popular or very hot thing that they're not currently offering, you could see that as an opportunity too. Like, hey, listen, I noticed you don't have a 30-minute dice game, like, you know, type of thing, or this is dumb, but you know, you don't have a deck builder. Here's it. You know what I'm saying? Like, if there's something hot that the market wants that they don't currently have, that can be kind of an angle too, or a niche that you could try to get in with them.
Or if you're like, you don't have a monster truck game, I feel like you need a monster truck game.
Yes.
Everybody needs a monster truck game.
Well, I'm sure that'll be the case next year once yours is out.
Well, not to dominate the conversation, but that actually brings me to my next point about sometimes the best pitches are like when you're not actually pitching. It's the guerrilla tactic of you're at UmPub, you're at Origins, you're at Gen Con, you're a known face, you get to be friends with everybody, you know a half a dozen publishers, and you're all hanging out, and organically, hey, let's play this game. And I'm not pitching you, but we're all playing this game and we're having a good time, and next thing you know, somebody might want it. So that's actually a really good way to kind of break into the industry, is you got to get out there and network. It's me and Matt actually haven't really succeeded much with the, like, we're talking about going to talk to Jay at Gen Con. He'll schedule your interview and he'll listen to your pitch, but we haven't been terribly successful in that space, talking to somebody that has no idea who we are and just trying to sell them a game. It's much easier when you're networking and you kind of know people before you're trying to sell them something.
And I do think too, guys, that I think this is, I mean, you haven't asked a question in like 5 minutes, we just keep answering.
No, you guys are good.
Yeah.
Just keep talking, fill time, yeah. That's cool.
That's all right. So the first time, I mean, we're talking about, and you guys do a lot of work with face-to-face pitching, and like Ben said, that is important, but it's also, that's the time, really, when they're at a con, they're going to see 30 games, or 50 games even, and they want to be blown away. They want something that just tickles them. So that might even be a harder setting for, like Ben and I was kind of talking about one of our favorite games, which we think we might have signed, but nothing official yet. That's a classic tile-laying euro. Well, no one at a con is buying a classic tile-laying euro from us because they need to see something, a hook. So the classic every single publisher out there, whether they be German, French, American, Canadian, whoever, everybody you've heard of, if they're taking, game submissions, which they don't all do, they have a process, and it's usually contact this guy, give him this information. So you go online, you find one of those sell sheets that there's a million out there that are good, kind of formats for those, and you fill it out, and then you do what the publisher tells you to do on their website. And that's the way you're probably going to get noticed the first time. And you're going to email everybody that you can think of that might possibly be interested and hope one sticks. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. Like, you shouldn't be afraid. I mean, we said a minute ago, you should try to make sure that you're speaking to the right audience. But don't be afraid to get rejected by 13 companies if one or two of them end up wanting to look at your rules or your proto. So just don't spam everybody if the game doesn't make sense, but every publisher that makes sense or might possibly be interested, follow the process. Go to the website, figure out who they want you to send the email to. It's almost always on there somewhere. It's usually some sort of like game submissions at company name, whatever, and do it. And just write a nice email, make sure it's spell checked, make sure it's formatted. Do a sell sheet that shows a couple pictures of your game, tells you, like, gives you a little 5-second story, gives you that elevator pitch, and submit it. And just do that as many times as you need to until somebody listens.
But even within that space, I think, Matt, you do a good job of your, I don't want to call it your cover letter, but your cover email or whatever you're attaching, of you're always very specific with what you're wanting them to evaluate with, like, hey, I think this would be a really good fit for this line you're doing, or you're very specific to them,
yeah.
Right?
Agree. So, yeah, you got to tune it each time. Don't just make one form letter and spam it. Make sure, again, that goes back to knowing your audience, right? So you're going to tune that letter a little bit. It takes a while. It's not like you sit and do it in an hour. You spend a whole couple nights doing it. And each individual email you send to Hans and Gluck and to Dice Hate Me and to Rio Grande and to each of those email addresses, you're going to tune your letter a little bit so that you know that they know that they know who you're talking, that you know who you're talking to. Like, you're talking to Rio because this is why Rio Grande would be interested, or this is why Hans and Gluck would be interested, this is why Dice Hate Me would be interested. So taking that letter with its base structure and then tuning it for each of those publishers, and then not being afraid to send it to as many as you think makes sense, as many as you think might be interested, and get rejected 90% of the time or 100% of the time, and then do it again.
So here's a question, and this is something that I think, well, I know Jason had this experience already, and I have interest from in Slim Tycoon from a first-time publisher, somebody who's published nothing at all yet. They say they're looking to start a new product line. So what do you have in thoughts in terms of that, about talking to a publisher that you don't necessarily know anything about?
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think, you've got to go in with different expectations. I mean, you've got to go in knowing that there's a chance for failure and that there's a chance for things to go a little bit differently. I mean, we would never be opposed to working with a small publisher if we had a good fit for them. I do think not every game can, not every company can do what Gamelin does, Michael Coe, and do small box games and make hundreds of thousands of dollars. But I do think if you're a new publisher, you're more likely to take a risk on a card game or a game with, you know, less bits and not as big of a box and not, you know, something a little bit less risky, I guess, from a component and cost perspective. So I think if we had a game like that that we felt would, you know, be a good fit, we'd be more than willing to do that.
I want to say that I'd be interested in having a conversation with them two-way and just want to hear about their plan, you know, their strategy, what is their following. I want to hear about if they've been, you know, blogging or do they podcast. Do they have a tribe? Me and Matt talk about this all the time. You guys as podcasters have a tribe. Does this publisher have a tribe yet? Do they have an email list? What's their reach? What's their Twitter following? What is their plan to reach backers? Like, I think it's okay to have that conversation. I'd be really interested to see what they're doing. Are they at the cons passing out cards? You know, like there's a couple smaller companies that have gone pretty big lately, and it's no surprise because they're at the cons handing out business cards and rubbing elbows and, you know, hanging out with Rodney Smith and just. You see these people around enough, and you know they know the game plan to do it right. So I'd want to hear about their plans for that. But I wouldn't say no. I mean, Matt and I talk all the time. We'll work with anybody that's a good fit, you know?
I completely agree, and Ben's completely correct. You have to trust that they're not – again, not to come off like Mr. Big Stuff, but, you know, Ben and I are something. We're a very small something, but we're a something, right? I wouldn't want to work with somebody that just thought they were getting us because we have our own tribe that we bring to the table. To Ben's point, I have to feel like we're on equal footing, where they were also bringing, you know, the publisher, I mean, was bringing something to the table, like their own sense of like a tribe or group of people that follow them or know them or support them, because it takes both of those sides. I mean, and I would say, too, I guess, I would think anybody, and this is kind of, you know, for you, even for you, Rob, I mean, at some point, if you're working with a publisher that's never done it before, well, then why wouldn't you just consider doing it yourself like Jason did? I mean,
because he watched me do that.
You're right. Listen, you want to design games. You don't want to run a business. I totally understand that. But even with, you know, some of the options now with Panda and Ad Magic that kind of do a lot of the work for you at a slightly higher cost, it's, you know, and not even, you know, bring up the, you know, name you shall not speak of Game Salute, but, you know, there's companies that are making it a little bit easier each time. Mm-hmm. So I guess to the same point that Ben mentioned, if you evaluate the option of a small, unknown publishing company and you're convinced that they can do best by you, then go for it. Mm-hmm. If you're not, then to me, but you really are passionate and you want to try it, I don't see why you wouldn't at least explore, mm-hmm. you know, Panda and Ad Magic and look into different distribution methods now. I know Greater Than Games is getting into that now, where they're going to start kind of providing that old Game Salute. You know, we'll hold your box for you and ship it out and all that kind of stuff. So there's options there.
Yeah, that's a point well taken. Like I watch what Jason Tagmar is doing with little things and short runs and, you know, once it's done kind of stuff. And that sort of approach makes a lot of sense to me. And that's kind of a scale that I feel like I could work under that has a great deal of appeal, kind of more boutique kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. I really, really like his approach to that.
I completely agree. Yeah. He did it in a way that he can do it manageably, right? I mean,
right.
The advantage he has is he's doing, you know, his projects he's run himself have been card based.
Yeah.
So you can do a card, you know, a card printer as opposed to a game printer, and he can do that in a way that he can do that from his house. Because here's the thing, Ben and I, before we knew, and sorry about the dog, we knew what we were doing, we sold 700 bags of fish meeples through the internet. Like we had this thing where we thought we were going to make these fish meeples because people wanted them for the first fleet. So I put a thread on BGG, and literally 700 people later, I'm selling fish meeples. And it sucked. Because you're going to the post office with 700 envelopes, and you're addressing 700 envelopes, and you're filling out customs forms. And it was awful. And none of that's fun. And we didn't make any money on it. We were doing it like as a service to the people that wanted fish meeples. And we sold them at cost, and it sucked.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't want to. That part's not fun, you know. The fun part is making the game. The fun part is getting other people to play your game. You know, that's the exciting thing, and all the business side of it is just, Oh, man.
But think about this. If you were with a smaller publisher, they're going to devote everything they have to your game. If you pick the right one. So,
yeah.
So that's a positive. They don't have this catalog of other things bogging them down that they're more interested in. Their butt's on the line, too. So they're going to give everything they have to your project. And that's attractive, too.
Yeah.
You know, if you're synced up with the right person that you believe in, that you think they can do it, but you know, you can be their next Lanterns or something like that. You know, they're going to give their all to your project.
That's a good point.
A very, very good point. But I do wonder, like Ben said earlier, you know, I kind of like to say, you know, no one knows nothing about nothing. And when you see Lanterns go so big, you're like, okay, that's awesome. Good for him, because he was nobody and he made Lanterns. But then you see, and I don't want to use a specific example, but there's some Kickstarters going on right now where I'd have lost money. I would have expected this specific Kickstarter to succeed. Like, if not $1 billion, I thought it had funded enough pretty well, and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, I'm sure, reasons why, but I would have lost. It seemed to me like it was a pretty safe bet. So there's just, and again, there's Kickstarters from established companies that don't succeed too. But I'd be scared with that new guy. It would be a scary, scary prospect, but hey, it's worth the risk, like Ben said. They're going to take care of you, I bet, and they're going to work with you, and they're going to do their best to make it happen. So
yeah.
Why not, right?
And, you know, and I don't know, it's hard to know what's the success and failure rate. I mean, how many games go up on Kickstarter that don't get funded that was supposed to be the big launch title for a new publisher and that we all forgot about? You know, I just don't know the answer to that question.
It's pretty high.
I have to assume. Negative,
but... It is pretty high, shockingly so, because, you know, we don't hear about most of the ones that don't make it. But
yeah.
But you know what? Most of the ones that don't make it, you look at the page and it's not professional. Like, we're getting lumped in with all these unprofessional, no professional art. Like, those projects shouldn't even count. Somebody needs to siphon off the data and start running numbers and only count ones that are presented halfway professionally, in my opinion.
Sure.
There are some that we've seen even currently that are presented super professionally and still are not doing very well, you know.
Right, for whatever reason.
So, agreed.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to get a feeling for what you think the reach is with this person you're signing up with. You know, Katarski, Green Couch Games, everyone was pretty confident that he was going to fund and do well with his first project because he has reach. He designed Heartland Trucking. He's everywhere. Everybody knows Jason Katarski.
Right.
I think we all expected him to succeed. I would have signed up with him in a second, because you knew he was going to succeed,
right?
And he did. So it's you just got to make the call. You got to take all.
Maybe that's the trick with Katarski. Maybe you just figured it out. He's not actually good at stuff. It's just we all think he is, and we all think he's going to succeed. So he just does. It's like he tricked us.
Self-fulfilling, right?
Yeah, exactly. He's a self-fulfilling prophecy. That's not true. In fact, I always tell him he has just this Midas touch where he just touches things and they turn to gold, like games and stuff. So, you know,
that's because he's awesome.
Yeah, he's a good dude. He is the perfect example of a great dude who deserves to be super successful, and he is. So
yeah, except he launched a podcast to sell us games and then stopped posting content.
Ooh!
You heard that, Jason? Start posting more podcasts.
Oh, are they not doing 20 seconds or 20 minutes of filler right now?
I don't know. There hasn't been one in like.
Well, you would know better than us, Ben, because you listen to all the podcasts. So I have a bunch in my queue, but I haven't caught up on them. So,
yeah, I'm sure he'll start posting them when his Scott Olms is ready to come out. You heard that, Jason. More content.
Oh.
I listen to every podcast that I'm on, and that's about it.
Is that just to make sure that they didn't edit anything to make you sound bad?
Just because I can hear my own voice.
Oh, okay. You know? Hey, that's why we do a podcast.
Hey, yeah.
That's true. No, I totally get it. I'm like, this is neat. No, I rely on Ben a lot to tell me, you know, what's happening, because he does keep up really well. So it's good.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He takes care of that side for me, because I don't have the opportunity to listen very often. So when I do, it's in like 10-minute chunks.
Right. I mean, Rob, back to the point of your question, your two games you're talking about the most lately, your Saloon Tycoon and your Epic Monster Tea Party.
Yeah.
In my honest opinion, both of those have enough swagger that they're attractive. Like, I honestly think both of those, when you see them on the table and you hear the name and you hear the theme and you hear what you're doing, I honestly think both of those would have a shot at any legitimate mid-sized publisher. I don't know who all you've shown them to and who's been evaluated, but I would give them their due diligence. I really would. I would hit everybody you can think of, and just I'd schedule not one. I'd schedule as many meetings at Origins as people will take. People are really good at Origins if you email them a couple months in advance of big companies too. I mean, Rio, Mayfair, you know, these are big companies take meetings. I'd give due diligence to both those designs. I think they're both really attractive.
I appreciate that. Thank you. You know, and that brings up one last question that I have here. So we've been talking so much about Kickstarter, you know, publishers that publish in that scale. I mean, we haven't talked at all about the big guys, you know, the big guys that don't need to go through Kickstarter. I mean, AEG, Mayfair. I mean, these are guys that maybe occasionally they'll put something on Kickstarter, but in general, that's not their... It's not their jam, you know. Are you intimidated by guys? Well, obviously, you've pitched to Rio. You say, I mean,
Jay specifically is intimidating, frankly. Rio, he's nice once you break him down, and we've had a modicum of success, like getting through his. I think our one guy who works in the room with him said, like, two Origins ago, he took two games home, so to speak, like at the end of the night.
Yeah.
Ours was one of them. Now he gave it back the next day and said no thanks, but still, it was like, hey, that was kind of rewarding.
Yeah.
We pitched all those guys. Everybody you listed, we pitched. Every other Z-Man, you know, everybody that's big like that, we've talked to. And I do think after, like I said, that first couple times, there is those nerves. But after that, it ends up being just the guy. And you figure out pretty quickly, it really is one guy. And even if the company's got 10 guys, only one guy has to like your game to get through the next step. So you're talking to a person who also likes games, by the way. And actually, he made kind of a funny comment. He's like, I don't want to play your game because I like games. And if I play your game, I'll probably like it. So I want to make sure, you know, he has to have like a couple wickets, mental wickets he goes through before he's willing to even kind of touch the pieces. Nice. So I don't think it's intimidating because it's no different, frankly. I mean, pitching, you know, a mid-sized guy like Michael Coe or, you know, Chris from Dice Hate Me, is no different than pitching Z-Man or AEG because it's still just you across the table from one person. And we've talked to all those guys. And I do think, you know, when you get to the level of, say, Asmodee, they're looking, like I said, legitimately. They're very honest with you. We don't need any games. We have enough games because they can print seven more games by, you know, awesome Euro guys. So if you're pitching them, they're looking for something completely different, completely new, and completely unique. So if you're going to go to them, you better have something that's – you better have a really, really big hook. And then going down from there, you know, some companies like Mayfair or even Rio or even Z-Man, they're a little more willing to just look at a really good game. So you just have to show them a really good game, and they still like to hear, you know, kind of themes. I guess my last piece of advice, too, before we get off the bigger the company, I think the more they want something that's done. And they don't – you know, people talk about developing, and they're going to play it and make sure it works, but they don't want – a game that has like this good idea and isn't, they want a finished product. They want to see a game, especially from guys like us. They want to see a game that's completely done. It has a good theme. It's all integrated. The rules are done and all it's a package. They're buying a product from you at that point that they're going to tweak and touch, but for the most part, they're buying a complete product. That's what they want to see. Mm-hmm. And that's what they expect to see. Otherwise they're just going to go on to the next guy. Cause there's 1,000 more of you waiting to talk to them.
That's actually a really good point. At our level, and we'll lump us all together on the same level of, you know, beginning designers, you know, a couple signed, you know, published here and there. But if they're looking for an Old West game, Rob, mm-hmm. they're not going to look at Matt and I's game and be like, man, that's a really good game, but we need an Old West, you know, saloon game. We're going to retheme your game. No, they're going to be like, hey, we got this game from Rob that's a saloon game we're looking at. We're going to do this one. Like, in our experience, they're not going to take the time, guys at our level, to bother retheming and whatever. They're just gonna go move on to the next guy that's got what they want,
right? Or they're gonna go get a game from one of the Brunos, and one of the Brunos they'll retheme one of their games, you know, Cathal or Fiduti. I mean, they're gonna take a game from those guys and put the theme on it. From us, guys like us, which is not an insult to guys like us, by the way, it's just the reality of it.
Sure
They want a game that's done.
Being so that's just done, encouragement
done, game is done,
right? Yeah, well, because I mean the fact is the Bruno name sells a lot more games than any of our names do. So you know, that's guaranteed, right? Like, yep. Hey, it's a game by Bruno Cathala. I will check out every game by Bruno Cathala. I might not buy it, but I will take the time to look at it because most of the time I like what he does. Not always, but, you know, I mean, enough to where I'm like, hey, I should look at that game.
Yep, 100%.
Yep. Okay, so to recap, and I'm sorry, did you have another comment there?
No, that was it.
Yeah. Okay, so to recap, so the big points that you guys have made here, make sure your game is done. Make sure, I should say, don't be afraid. I mean, they're just people who like playing games. Don't expect the publisher to play your game. You need to have a short 30-second hook to get the point across and to express what the game is and what makes your game unique.
Yeah, that's pretty fair. Especially in person about the not playing. In our limited experience, they'll let you get it out and start setting it up. As you talk about it, they may or may not play a few turns. If they're interested, they might say, send the rules over, or can I take this prototype? Mm-hmm. Very rarely are they going to sit for more than a couple minutes and play a few turns. So being able to get their attention quickly, the hope being that they ask for your prototype or that you send a prototype or rules along, in our experience, is a success.
Okay. I think it's fantastic advice. Do you guys have any last thoughts to add to that?
I don't think so. I think it's just be, you know, I want to reiterate to be prepared. I mean, just know, practice it in the mirror. I mean, like you guys do with each other. Practice it with somebody. Kind of know what you're going to say. Because not everybody's good at speaking, and that shouldn't necessarily completely impede your ability to sell a game. So just know what you're going to say, know how you're going to say it, and get right to it. You know, just because you're going to know pretty quickly if they have any interest. Sometimes the guy's checked out, and he's going to give you, they're probably going to give you, if you've got a 20-minute meeting, they're going to give you all 20 minutes probably, but you can tell they've checked out 5 minutes in. So get everything you want to get out right away and just practice.
Okay. So, Jason, I think a good takeaway for us going forward here is I think we should challenge ourselves with every pitch we do in the future to do a 30-second synopsis that will grab in some way. The hook, basically,
like
to take
like
their
that.
Advice. I think that's fantastic advice and a good thing for us to practice, absolutely. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, that is a great idea.
Yeah.
So. Well, cool. Hey, we were gonna do like a pitch thing with you guys, like where we had you pitch a game, but we used all the time to do this because we didn't want to stop you guys because you were just saying really, really good stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Just rambling.
No, yeah. This was
fantastic,
this
guys.
Was great.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure the listeners find it as enlightening as we did, but you know.
Well, I got a pitch for you in 30 seconds.
Do it.
It's a dice game where you're rolling boulders down the hill to knock caravans over and loot them, but you physically are going to roll the dice down these chutes and knock stuff over and pick up the loot and do little set collections.
I love that.
That's the next big thing.
That's awesome.
That game better get published. I'm on board, man. That is amazing.
You're trolls, by the way. You're trolls.
Even
why would
better.
You not be? Why would you not be?
I'm a big supporter of trolls. I like
that
trolls.
That's the pitch.
That's awesome.
That's super great.
And in that 30 seconds, if I'm a publisher, I'm already trying to figure out how I'm going to make those ramps, because that sounds amazing. You guys made Rob so happy and laugh so hard that he just hit his head on the microphone.
Yeah.
True story. He was so excited.
The harder part is actually whether or not we can actually knock stuff over, because I think Ben's going to grok the ramps to figure it out. But the reality of it is the goods right now are just tiles that lay, and they're still awesome, but it would be so much better to knock them over first. Even if it didn't mean anything to knock them over, even if that was just like chrome, like even if you didn't knock them over, you still got to take them. But just the ability to have the chance to knock them over, we have to figure out how to
you work on it. That's do like punchboard wagons. I mean, that wouldn't be that hard to do.
Yeah.
No, but it's game two of our Polyethyl Dice Trilogy, and we're not... A D4 doesn't carry the... We want the D4 to be a viable part of... Or not really D4, actually. We broomed the D4, I think. But even like
how's a D4 going to go?
Exactly. Well, we broomed the D4 because it was lame. So the D6, though, still... I mean, the D12's got nice mass.
Yeah.
And, like, rolls and spins really well. A D6 kind of slides.
Right.
So it's going to take a little bit of engineering to get that D6 and knock over a caravan of goods.
You can make the ramp bumpy.
Right.
So that it wasn't 100%. Like a smooth chute, so that the
like,
ramp was...
Like terraced, even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that when you rolled it, you know, they dropped off and stuff, and make those terrace ledges almost like steps, you know? So
like slope steps.
Yeah. Ta-da! There you go.
Done.
And I mean, if you're making this by hand, Ben, I mean, it might be like that anyway. So, right?
That's awesome.
That'd be super cool, though, guys. Yeah. That sounds like a great scene. So, so listeners, there is a great 30-second hook for a game that I don't even care how the game works. I already bought the game. Like, on Kickstarter, if I saw that, I already bought the game. And I may regret it later, but I already bought the game, so it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter later.
And now, thanks to Camel Up, 3D is the hot thing, right?
I love Camel Up. Stock.
Yeah.
It did make some people think that that's cooler. So I think it's neat. I mean, it feels like you're getting a lot for your money when you like put stuff together, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When there's 3D you know, things, I know, Matt, you don't care about anything.
I know.
But...
No, listen, I'm wrong. Like,
Not wrong. You're just not fun.
Yeah, it is. Like, I haven't played Pulp Express, but I have played Steam Park, and I didn't particularly like it. And the reality of it is, the roller coasters could have been flat tiles and have been exactly the same game. So,
but it makes the game more fun when there's cooler things.
I don't know. Listen, that pyramid in Camel Up is an engineering marvel. It drops a one die every time. It's amazing. But it could have been a bag. It would have been the same game.
Yeah.
I promise you, it would have been the same game.
I agree with that.
I don't know if it would have won the Spiel des Jahres with a bag.
Might not have.
Because they look at, like the bang for your buck with it, right? And like it feels like you got a better deal because it's got a freaking pyramid in it. You know what I've realized? Like, if I had to like have Rob and I partner up on this stuff, like I'm Ben and Rob is Matt. What's funny is like I'm more into the stuff that Matt is into, I think, like with like feeling more comfortable talking to people and stuff. But like Rob is a curmudgeon, and I kind of feel like Matt is a curmudgeon too. Like Ben's this nice guy that like wants to be friends with people,
uh-huh.
And that's me. And Rob's just kind of a curmudgeonly jerk, like Matt Riddle.
Listen, behind the scenes, Ben is way harder on games than I am. Like, don't get me wrong.
But he's too nice to say it in person. I guess so. Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
it's exactly what it is. We're tough on games. Our group is a bunch of A-type nerdy engineers. And even before we became designers, we always sat like almost live action, critique these games we were playing. And we're a tough crowd to please. We are. And I know that about us. But Ben's much harder to please than me from a game perspective these days. He's just nicer about it in person.
Yeah, well, that could be, you know.
And I occasionally get us in trouble on email and whatever. We won't go into that.
Sure. Well,
I'm nice most of the time. Yeah.
Well, guys, we're out of time. Thank you again so much for everything. This was a fantastic conversation. I think we're gonna get a lot of great feedback on this episode. Thank you so much. We really owe you for this one.
Don't forget to check out time, don't forget to check out Floating Market.
Floating Market.
If they're not sold out yet.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
And where can people find you guys? How can they follow you and check out what you're doing?
On Twitter is where I am mostly these days. I'm at Pinchback21. I'm on Twitter as well, MD Ridlen. I'm also over at BGG a lot, Ridlen, RIDDLEN. Just send me a geek mail, I'll always respond. I write those little crowdfunding things once a month, so if you ever have anything you want to tell me about, give me lots of advance notice because I don't write that often. But yeah, find me on BGG or Twitter, that's the easiest way. I'll always say hi, always respond back.
Excellent.
Speaking of real quick before we go of your little email blast you do. So I had never met you before, and the first thing I ever got to see from you, and you made my day, by the way, was when I did Water Balloon Washes as a Kickstarter. You included it in your Kickstarter thing, and you said, it's a little sparse on the art and details, but it looks like it'll get the job done, or something to that effect. And I was like, hey, I'm counting that as a good review.
Yeah.
So. You know, that was one of the first crowdfunding roundups I'd ever written. I knew who you guys were kind of because of Ben and, you know, because of he knew the podcast.
Right.
Because I knew you were Michigan guys. And so I was also much nicer back then.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a little more leeway to be kind of a jerk now when I write those things. I still try to mostly be nice, but, you know, because people kind of know who I am a little bit more now, I can take shots a little bit more than I used to.
Right.
And, But I still try to be honest. I don't trash things just for the sake of trashing things.
Of course,
I didn't say that the art was
I think Spartan was the word I used, probably, if I recall. But yeah. It looked like, you know, it was functional, and that's what matters.
Right. And it was, yeah, because I didn't realize that you should have, like, lots and lots of art before you put a Kickstarter game out. So, and the game ended up with great art. I'm super happy with it. But, yeah, yeah. But it was just kind of funny at the time. It cracked me up. So, yeah. And it wasn't bad, so that was good. That made me because I was afraid it was going to be like, don't back this. So.
Well, now that I know you, I'll definitely cover anything else you do.
And say, don't back this.
Yeah, well, no. I'll be nice.
Oh, sweet. I'm sure AJ will appreciate that with Ramblers. So.
Yeah,
that's true. Okay. So. You know what's funny? Real quick, speaking of, I don't want to make your podcast go even longer. I gave AJ a lot of credit, and I actually kind of made fun of him in my company roundup when I covered Hostage Negotiator because of that awful cover he did the first time.
Oh, yeah.
When he redid it for Hostage Negotiator. So in that, my write-up, I made fun of him for the original cover, but then gave him credit for the new cover. So he, you know, he's a good dude.
Met him well, then he was able to, I think, from some of the pictures I've seen, I think he was able to take the original cover art and actually use it for some cards where it looked a lot better. It was just a little harsh as a cover. So, yeah. But yeah, the new cover, I love the new cover he did with the,
oh, fantastic.
With the double yeah. faces. That
oh,
looks
yeah,
so
it's
good.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. The Terminator 2 cover. It's awesome.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I never even thought about that. Yeah. That makes me like it even more.
No, it's legit.
So
cool. All right, that's it. We got to call it. So thanks, listeners, for listening to the show. We appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with me and Jason, you can send an email to buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow the show on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerlin, and I'm @poorly_designed. Please give us some likes on Facebook and some 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you want to send us, what am I saying here? If you want to buy any of our games, go to our website, buildinggamepodcast.com. There you can order Water Balloon Washout. You can also find links to the Game Crafter where you can get your own copies of Rumplebum Academy for Bug-Based Baking, Epic Monster Tea Party, and Finish It, the Outrageous Storytelling Party Game. Also, call our Google Voice number, 770-TEL-BTG. Leave us voicemails, and we didn't have time for any of that today, so we'll get to that in future episodes, I promise. And Something for Nothing, the bi-weekly video show with Jason, Chevy, and TC, where they talk to smart people like Ben and Matt about smart games. Game stuff, unless they can't get a guest, and then it's just those idiots.
It happens.
It does. And
it's all TC's fault.
That's right. That's all we got for tonight. So again, Matt and Ben, guys, thank you so much. We owe you one for this. This has been a fantastic time.
Thank you.
All right. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
What's up?
Hey, there he is.
Yeah, I'm giving you credit, Bart.
I was like, Riddle doesn't do anything, right? Except for sell the games to people. Which isn't that hard since you're always selling them to the same place. Just saying.
Hey, man. If you got a horse, you got to ride it.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I'm jealous. I'm not like making fun of you.
No, I was going to say, what are you going to like? Okay, so hey guys, how do you pitch publishers? I don't know, we email Rick. Is that the process? Is that normal?
We got insanely lucky, and one publisher took a chance on our proto that had paper taped with scotch tape to playing cards, and that went well. That's the real story.